Hey y'all, how you been? It's Brad. I know it's been a minute, sorry that I haven't posted any new episodes on the main feed for some time. You know how it goes with me and posting sort of irregularly on the main feed these days. But wanted to give you a little something. So we've been doing episodes on the bonus feed on Patreon, which you can sign up for, by the way. And we've been talking to past guests, some exclusive guests, about their favorite Sad Bastard music. So recently we talked to my new buddy Albert Corrado about one of our favorite bands, Bright Eyes. Made a big impact on both of us, and we really went off on it. And so I wanted to give you a little taste. Daddy's going to give you a little taste of this one. It's not the whole episode, but it's a piece of it. And if you want to hear the rest, just go sign up. Just go sign up. It's easy and it's cheap. You won't even notice. You can do it from, well, don't do it from your phone, actually. If you have an Apple device, you gotta do it on a desktop because Apple is taking some bullshit percentage from Patreon. It's stupid, so do it on a desktop. But other than that, go sign up and go listen to the rest of the episode. This is a really good one. And I'm releasing it, you know, to the public in honor of Conor Oberst's birthday. How about that? February 15th. It's our boy's birthday. Happy birthday, darling. We love you very, 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 very much. So enjoy this episode about Bright Eyes with my friend Albert Corrado. And get the rest of it if you want to pay for it. Nothing's free, okay? I'd like to know, kind of, first of all, like, what's your history with Bright Eyes? How'd you come to them, and what's, you know, tell me, walk me through your discovery.
Are we recording right now?
Yeah, we're recording right now. Oh, we're okay. Already going. Cool. It's already been going.
Great. Yeah, I mean, so it's funny. I heard about Bright Eyes in high school. I was in high school in the early 2000s, graduated 06, and so at that point, you know, by the time I got out of high school, you know, I'm Wide Awake It's Morning and Digital Ash had come out. Mm-hmm. There's a radio station here called K-Rock, and they are like pretty legendary. They, you know, they broke a lot of bands in LA. They've played, you know, they play Sublime and Chili Peppers and all these like kind of local bands. And so, you know, they would play like that kind of stuff in Weezer and Green Day, you know, the kind of typical stuff from the 90s and early 2000s. And one day I hear this song called Road to Joy. And I'm like, oh, this is a cool song. This guy sounds weird. Like, I don't know what it is, but I'm into it. And I don't really explore more beyond that for a few years. I'm like, oh, that's a great song. I put on a couple of mixes. And then my sister, Melly, was kind of playing them a lot around the apartment. And over time, I was like, okay, like, this stuff is kind of good. Like, it took me a minute to get used to his voice.
Yeah, and it's an acquired taste, and I think he'd be the first to admit that.
Yeah, and so, you know, whatever. I grew up listening to, like, punk and metal and stuff, so it was like I wasn't, you know, it wasn't like I wasn't used to weird voices or whatever.
Yeah, you get used to
whatever.
Ugly voices, that's part of it.
Yeah, and so then a few years later, my buddy and I, we're hanging out at a Burger King. Mm-hmm. And in a parking lot, as many amazing things happen in parking lots, he shows me the song called At the Bottom of Everything, and it blew my mind. And I was like, oh my God, this song is everything. It's beautiful, mm-hmm. poetic, it sounds cool. And then, so that was 2008. And I, you know, I remember the dates because I, you know, this band has meant so much to me for so long. And so I heard that song, he played it again, and then I went and bought every album I possibly could and downloaded stuff on LimeWire, like as was the mode back then. And that was 2008. And I've seen him now. I'm seeing him tomorrow. I'm seeing Bright Eyes tomorrow. And it'll be my 70th time seeing Conor Oberst in concert. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that is wild. So I am from Nebraska. I grew up steeped in all of this. And I've seen the guy three times. And that's it. Yeah. And but like I'm already like a huge fan, but I'm always interested to hear how other people discovered him, because like obviously at this point, you know, he's out in the zeitgeist and everything. But for like a minute there, he was kind of just our little guy, you know. And so like when it's like people from California or like the far reaches of the world, you know, it's just like, wow, we made it. We're out here in the world and like we're in Nebraska. And like, you know, because the thing with growing up in the Midwest is you feel like nobody knows who you are. You're a flyover state. There's nothing there. Right.
I mean, it's funny, yeah, because I think I, you know, obviously knew where Nebraska was and knew a bit about it. But, you know, my biggest connection to Nebraska is just like having gone to Omaha to go see Connor a few times. And everyone's like, oh, where's this guy from? I'm like, oh, he's from Omaha, like a city that I'd heard of when I was a kid and then now have been to a couple times. And, you know, yeah, it is funny how the music kind of spreads. And what's interesting to me is that, you know, he released that song First Day of My Life, and like I think that's going to go down as his most popular song. And it's like, it's funny that like he's a Nebraska guy, but that song will be played like everywhere in the world at a wedding or mm-hmm. some sort of, you know, big life event. So it is cool. And I mean, is there any sort of like hometown hero vibes that you get from him, or like people being proud of him because he's from where he is?
I think yes and no. So like when I was coming up in high school, I graduated high school in 2003. I was aware of Bright Eyes and the Saddle Creek scene around mm-hmm. 2001 or something like that. So like right after like Fevers and Mirrors. And by that time, like a lot of my friends were like in the Lincoln music scene. And mm-hmm. by that time, I think there was already like a weird backlash against the Saddle Creek thing, particularly Bright Eyes, because they were starting to pop off. And yeah. I think there was a lot of, even among like skinny little, you know, Rivers Cuomo looking guys who are like record nerds, there was like toxic masculinity. Mm-hmm. There was like, oh, what a little bitch, what a little pussy, like right, what a self-involved right. little fucking little guy, right? And so like that was sort of like I knew people who had all of his records, but a lot of my friends, even like record store guys, who, you know, weighed 150 pounds and like mm-hmm. were yeah. just little ectomorph guys, were still just like, he's fuck this guy, right?
Yeah.
And I would kind of join in because I didn't really know, I don't know, because like I looked up to them and then like I wanted to sort of share their opinions, but then sure. I would listen to it, so I would publicly shit on Bright Eyes and Connor Oberst, and then I would go and like turn on my like second generation iPod and just listen to it by myself for hours and hours and hours. And yeah, so it, I mean, for me, it's always been headphones music. It's never been like a thing I put gotcha. On with the boys, which like I've heard you on your show talk about how like this is like a thing you like listen to with your friends on road trips, which blows my mind.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's funny because I think that was, I was also kind of like a person who would dunk on that stuff in high school and, you know, who like looked at the emo scene as kind of like lesser than, you know, being from the, you know, a kid who loved punk rock and all mm-hmm. that and being like, oh, whatever, like, what is this? It's sad shit and it's whatever, you know. I mean, I honestly said probably a lot of not nice things about it. But I think what was, you know, as I've gotten older, you know, my mom died when I was 14, and that was this big, you know, monumental trauma. And I think, you know, in that time, I was engaging with my grief through anger. You know, it was like I was angry. I was wanting the world to listen to me, to pay attention, to feel my pain. And so my band for like most of high school was Nine Inch Nails. Like that yeah. was, Trent Reznor was like, that's my guy. He understands me. He knows what it's like to feel this pain. And I think as I got older and matured a little bit, I was like, oh, okay, but now I'm dealing with my grief in a more open way. I'm able to articulate it better. And so then I found someone like Connor Oberst, who like has such a beautiful way with words and is talking about, you know, death and life and all these things. And so I think it took me getting a little bit more mature and understanding, okay, like Trent is my boy forever. I will see Nine Inch Nails anytime I have a chance. Like I love mm-hmm. that stuff. but I don't engage with it the same way that I do as I did when I was 15, because I'm not as angry, I'm not as lost. But I think Connor has stuck with me so long because, like, he kind of has songs for every part of grief, but every part of your life too, right? If you want to get angry and angsty, you go to Fevers and Mirrors and a little bit of Lifted, and then you have Desaparecidos if you want to still get, you know, punk rock about it. And then he has all this other stuff that's like, oh, I'm in love, I'm heartbroken, I'm this, I'm that. And he really writes songs. I think the only thing he doesn't really write are like party songs.
He doesn't really write party songs, which is funny because he's like a real, I don't know, his reputation is like, I'm a drinker, right? And he's not a fist bumping drinker. He's like a Hemingway drinker, you know?
Exactly.
He's one of those guys. I'm interested that, like, you came around to listening to him when you had kind of emotionally matured a little bit, because, like, mm-hmm. for me, it was kind of the opposite, because I think his earlier catalog, so everything from, like, you know, the inception through like 2005 is like the sweet spot for me, because that's when he was young and full of just rage and hormones and feelings and teenagedom and like all of this, like, really kind of sloppy, messy, snot-nosed, crying, like, inarticulate kind of emotion, which is what I really, like, felt at the time, and which is why, like, me as, like, a 40-year-old man now, like, I still go back and listen to an album like Fevers and Mirrors. Like, I honestly put on a collection of songs the other day and was just like, God damn.
Yeah.
This fucking 16-year-old kid has got some heaters that, like, really, like, speak to me as, like, an adult with a job and back pain, you know? And, like...
Right, yeah. I mean, yeah, he was like Dylan in that way, that he was speaking to an experience that you would think would come from a very much like a very older person, right? Like, he at 16, he was touching on things that, like, you and I, as I'm in my, you know, I'm 36, you're 40. So, like, now we're kind of, oh, okay. Like, what he was talking about now, I'm kind of getting to that point, but he was already talking about it when he was 16, which is kind of insane, you know?
The emotional intelligence is just fucking crazy. Yeah. And, like, I marvel at it still sometimes. It's just like, how did he know all of that at such a young age? But anyway, you came about Bright Eyes at a little bit more of a, like, mature point in your life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the album that you wanted to bring to this episode is Casadaga. I don't even know how to pronounce it. I've never actually said it.
Casadaga. Yeah.
Which, like, to me, like, that's... That kind of is like the demarcation line of, like, latter day Bright Eyes. When he hit this turning point of sort of maturity as a songwriter. And I'll be honest, it's not my favorite. I don't hate it, but it to me, like, latter day Bright Eyes albums, everything, like the new Five Dice All Threes, People's Key, everything has been just kind of like, this is good, but it also, like, I feel like I forget it as soon as I turn it off, where it doesn't, like, get into my skull and my heart and soul and, like, stay in my spinal cord like LSD. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, like, I want you to talk about, like, how this album impacted you and where you were at in your life when you discovered it and all of that.
Yeah, I mean, so I think what's the reason why I love this album, and because when I was kind of taking all this Bright Eyes in, it was like I could engage with, like, The Lover I Don't Have to Love. I can engage with, like, Collection of Songs and Fevers and Mirrors, but I also was, you know, I think I was looking for connection that was a little deeper than that. And, you know, I ended up making my way back to that stuff and fully appreciating it as time went on. But I think, honestly, Casadega was the first full, besides I'm Wide Awake It's Morning, which I always say that to me is, if you want to make someone a Bright Eyes fan, like, if there's any chance of them becoming a Bright Eyes fan, you show them I'm Wide Awake It's Morning.
Yeah.
It's wall-to-wall bangers. It's the most accessible. It's got the, you know, the songs in there are timeless. But I think Casadega spoke to me because it was like at a pivotal time in my life. I just, you know, was turning 20, was, you know, I had just gotten out of like my first real like relationship that was like my high school girlfriend. And it was like, we talked about like serious things and building a life together. And it was like, I realized, oh, I don't want to be with this person. I'm young. I want to go and do other things and have other experiences. I didn't want to like, you know, tie my fate to someone that I met when we were, you know, 17. And so when this album came to me, I think what spoke to me about this was that it is very much an album about Connor trying to find answers. Whereas, you know, you look at an album like Fevers and Mirrors, you look at Lifted, even Collection of Songs, it's kind of a snot-nosed kid who thinks he knows it all.
Yeah.
And what I love about, like, if you look at a song on I'm Wide Awake It's Morning, like, We Are Nowhere and It's Now, when he says that line, if you hate the taste of wine, why do you drink it till you're blind? And that's him referencing the song The Vanishing Act, because he says, I drink this wine till I go blind or whatever. So he's always kind of at odds with his old self. He's always kind of calling out, like, you know, there's a song in The People's Key, Shell Games, it starts with, he references all of his albums to that point. It says, I took the fireworks and the vanity, the circuit board, you know, he's mentioning Fevers and Mirrors and Letting Off the Happiness. And he's basically saying, I made all this and I put it out there and I just wanted some validation. I wanted some sort of like, you know, I wanted someone to tell me this is good or you have done something good. And so Casadega to me was him coming to a place where he's like, I've been called rock's boy genius. I've been called the next Dylan. I made two incredible albums back to back. But now I'm still looking for answers. He also lost one of his dear friends. I want to say to overdose. I think if you look, you can kind of find out that's what happened. But she played the harp on Digital Ash and A Digital Urn. And he, I think they were maybe romantically involved. And she had passed away in between the release of those two albums. And so there is a sense of loss that, you know, when this album came to me, it was 5 years after my mom had died. So I was still pretty fresh and, again, you know, like maturing and expanding my knowledge of grief. And so this album is Connor looking for answers. It's him trying to cleanse himself. It's him, you know, thinking about the open road and what life means. And you know, some people go to God for answers. Some people go to tarot cards and Ouija boards. And, you know, the album starts with him. It's you hear the person on the other line is a like a telephone psychic. And she's telling him, hey, take this trip, go do this. You're going to find this, you're going to find that. And, you know, it's sort of it builds up to be kind of almost creepy because it's like the way that they do this, the music with the discordant notes and all that, it's somebody telling him like a disembodied voice, basically, because you don't hear the other side of it. You know, you don't hear the person asking for help. You hear the person who's giving the advice. And so it almost is like, you got to take this trip, you got to do something. And so in that part of my life, I had been in this relationship that wasn't fulfilling me. I'd broken up with her and was like, I'm 20. I have my whole life ahead of me. What am I going to do with my life? I chose not to go to college, but I still want to like do something with myself. And so this album to me is about the, you know, everybody wants a fresh start, but there's no such thing. You know, you will carry your pain and your trauma to it. And you can definitely go to different phases and say, okay, this is the demarcation line. This is where the new stuff starts. And everything else is behind me, but you bring the past with you no matter where you go. So,
yeah,
you know, it just spoke to me in a deep way of just like trying to get clean, trying to find new experiences, but also paying homage to what got me there in the first place. And I think that's why this album works so well for me, because I was looking for answers. And by the way, I'm still looking for answers. I'm 36 years old. You know, I've definitely done a lot of things that I'm really proud of. And that I can point to and say, I was part of this and that rocks. At 20, I hadn't done anything, but I was still had this like, you know, am I just my grief, right? Am I just my mom dying when I was 14? Am I just the person that's going to be forever defined by this pain, by what I've been through? And I do think Casadega is probably one of the most mature albums that Connor's ever done. Because he's a little bit older, not too much older than he was when I'm Wide Awake came out, but it's him grappling with like, okay, the love affair with the albums and my being, you know, he's basically I'm too old to be a wunderkind anymore. Now yeah. I'm like, I'm just a man and I have all this pain and trauma and I've lost people. And there's a lot of references to getting clean from drugs in this album.
Right.
So it's like, I think it's him, you know, I think he became rock's savior or indie rock's savior when, Fevers and Mirrors came out. And then a bunch of years pass and he did all this and he's like, fuck, okay, I've done everything I wanted to do. I'm in a successful band. I'm going to go down as like a legend in some circles. What the fuck is next? And it's him in his mid 20s, you know, contesting with all that stuff, you know?
Yeah, which I mean is a crazy thing to think about, like a guy having that level of existential freak out in his like mid 20s with that level yeah. of accomplishment. You know, it's wild, but it is, like I was saying, it's a demarcation between, like, I think there is something so angsty and grasping and clawing at something in his yeah. early work, and then in Casadega and everything since, his solo work, everything, there is this like point of like enlightenment where he like sort yeah. of has reached this like, okay, I've, you know, it's like that famous Prince quote, like, I've been to the top of the mountain, there's nothing there, you know?
Yeah.
So my feelings on the album, like, I like a lot of the songwriting. I think there's it's perhaps a little too overproduced. There was that podcast we both listened to about the making of I'm Wide Awake, It's Morning, and there's all these interviews with Mike Mogus, and he's just like, oh, I really had to like hold back on this because we were really trying to make like a stripped down, you know, spare yeah. album. And I was like, yeah, that's what you should have done the whole fucking time, because like,
yeah,
I listened to a lot of latter day Bright Eyes stuff, and to be honest, all due respect, it's like that I Think You Should Leave sketch, like, there's too much fucking shit on me, like, there's yeah, too yeah. much, there's like this like yeah. wall of sound, you're trying to be fucking Phil Spector, and it's just it's not that. And my favorite latter day Conor Oberst record is Ruminations. Which is yeah. just him, piano,
very stripped down,
guitar, yeah. harmonica, and that's it. And I forget where I was going with that, actually. What were we talking about before?
Well, I mean, I'll say this, you know, so as far as Casadega goes, and I'm a fan of all of Connor's stuff. I think that there's stuff in the later days that I'm like, oh, okay, like, there's some songs I'll skip, whatever. He's been making music professionally for like 25 years. Like, yeah. he's going to have some, or maybe almost 30 years now. He's going to have songs that I don't like care for. It just happens. But I do think what's interesting about Casadega. So Casadega is itself is a city in Florida, and mm-hmm. it's a spiritualist retreat. So basically everybody who lives in that town is in touch with, or claims to be in touch with, the other realm. So the first song is called Clairaudience. Being clairaudience, I believe, is that you can hear the dead speak, so you can communicate with them somehow. Clairvoyance, obviously, is seeing. So it's, I think that the logical progression from doing those two albums back to back, these you know, life-changing albums that people love, I think he was trying to challenge himself and say, you know what, I don't want to be defined by First Day of My Life, or I don't want to be defined by whatever people are putting on me. And so I think he wanted to have this big sound, and it's honestly why he hasn't done, you know, and I get what you're saying about the production of the later stuff being a little bit more, you know, it's bigger and it's yeah. not as stripped down as that. But I think Casadega is the one that he even, I think, has gone on record saying, like, I don't want to do a record with, like, he was having a full orchestra and, you know, 10 piece and all that stuff. And so he wanted to like challenge himself. And I think that the Casadega connection is, you know, again, it's these people who, even though they claim to have this connection to the other realms, right? Whether the dead or some other dimension or whatever they're claiming, mm-hmm. that they're still not happy, that there's still a sense of not knowing. And just as, you know, I got a lot of religious people in my life.
Yeah.
And there's still a level of uncertainty there that
they're still humans. You know, to me, it's still the human condition, and they're still mortal, and they still have hopes and fears and doubts and all of that. Like, you can't. I think anybody who tries to transcend that, I don't super trust them. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I remember what I was going to say. There's that line in Ruminations on Next of Kin. I met Lou Reed and Patti Smith. It didn't make me feel different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, that's it. Like, that's what you discover later in life is, like, you do all this shit that you think is going to be so exciting and so life-changing.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, wherever you go, there you are, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I've met heroes of mine and done things that I never thought I could do. And at the end of the day, I'm still, like, a really, like, self-doubting, depressive guy. I'm not making enough money. My problems persist.
I mean, shit, listen, I've met Connor a few times. I've spoken to him. I've shared.
You've met him. Okay. I've never met him.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
what's
he
like?
I mean, he's cool, man. I mean, he's as cool as, you know, listen, the guy's been in the public eye to some degree for 30 years, basically. Mm-hmm. He, like, has been mobbed by fans. He's had his personal life picked apart.
Yeah.
You know, all that stuff. So I would say he's as well adjusted. Again, I spent like an hour with him in person drinking beers and having great conversations. So I don't know beyond that. I can't speak to that. But he was great. I mean, he was very gracious. He's very kind to me in a time where I had experienced a really traumatic event in my life a few years ago. People can Google me if they want, whatever. But he was so kind to me and was like, hey, let me meet you. Come and hang out with me backstage at a show, and was awesome.
How did this come about? How did you get in his ear?
He found my email somehow. I think he knew somebody that I knew. Like, I have friends who work in like media or whatever. So he knew that like my sister was killed a few years ago, and we had done her funeral. It was like this big national news story. And we played a bunch of Conor Oberst at the funeral because that was one of her favorite bands too.
I heard about this, by the way, and very sorry to hear about all of that.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, after the funeral, like a month later, I get an email saying, hey, this is Conor Oberst. Like, so, you know, I forgot. He's like, someone gave me your email. I wanted to reach out to you because like,
what was
I
that know like?
It was
getting
incredible.
An email. I mean, on Gmail. Did it just say like you got a like Conor Oberst? Conor Oberst said hi.
Yeah, it was like his email, but then it said something. It said hello from Conor Oberst was the title of the email.
Did you think, because like, I'm on like his mailing list and shit. Did you think for a second that this was just like his?
I no. You know what's funny? I saw it and I freaked out, but then I realized like, because everything was so surreal in my life at that time, where it's like I had this thing that shouldn't have happened, and my family and I were in the news now. We're talking to like reporters. Yeah. Like my life just had taken this weird turn. I was like, fuck. Then of course, Conor Oberst is going to email me, of course, because my life doesn't make sense now.
Right.
But I read it, and it was basically, he said, you know, I heard about your sister. I recognize you, and I recognize her from shows, because we had gone to tons of shows together to see him, and basically was like, I know what it's like. He told me that, you know, his brother had passed away at that point, like a year before that, and he's like, I know what it's like to lose a sibling, and you know, basically be kind to yourself, remember the good times. And then at the end of the email, he was like, hey, I'm playing all these shows, would love to see you at them, and I'd love to meet you. And I emailed him back and was like, I'm going to be at this show. I'm going to be at all your shows that you're playing because I'm a big fan. Wow. And he's like, cool. So I'll see you at the Santa Cruz show. And so I went to Santa Cruz up here in Northern California, and someone came. I was in the front, like the front of the venue. Someone came and got me and introduced me to Connor and his band. And we hung out and had beers. They signed like a record for me. Phoebe Bridgers was hanging around at that time too. So she was there like, you know, because she was opening for him at that during that little, it was
she
like
was,
a small tour.
She was just
tour.
Slinking around, being ethereal.
Yeah, I mean, this is like a year before she really blew up. Like, she was opening for Connor, and I was like, oh, like, she's cool. And I kind of had heard about her at this point. Like, there was, you know, murmurings of her and her music. But Yeah, and then we talked, and it was amazing. And I you know, I told him about, you know, as much as I could. I didn't want to be like too much of a fanboy. Like I grew up in LA, and I've worked in coffee shops here, so I've met my fair share of famous people. And like, right. You got to keep your cool.
Oh
so
yeah,
I kept my cool. You know, I kept my cool.
Okay.
Yeah, and I was like, I asked a couple of questions about songs, and I told them about like, I'm like, hey man, like Casadega's always meant so much to me. Like, you know, one day I hope to hang out with you, and you can tell me like deeper about what it is. And then he kind of laughs. He's like, oh, of course. And you know, but he was a great dude. I'm seeing him tomorrow. And I emailed him a year and a half ago to ask for if my friends can use one of his songs in a documentary they made. And he said yes. So like, wow. The guy's a fucking, he's awesome. He's a G.
Okay. One, how tall is he? All right. That's it. That's all you get. So if you want to hear the rest, you know what to do. Go over to patreon.com/selfworst. Sign up. And yeah, pay me some money. That's part of it. And then you can hear all the rest of it. And we'll get you taken care of. And there's going to be many more bonus episodes coming up. In fact, there might be more bonus episodes on the Patreon feed than on the regular feed going forward for a while. So you want my content, then you gotta pony up. All right. I hope you enjoyed the preview. Now go do something else.